That to-do list you have needs one more thing. Chill. It's an easy thing to do. Just crack open an ice-cold Coors Light and chill. Take the afternoon off and binge-watch anything. Go to happy hour and stay for a couple hours. Who's counting anyways? Or hang out with just your dog because you've had enough human interaction this week. Whatever you do, do it with a Coors Light. Mountain Cold Refreshment made to chill. 2020 Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. Celebrate responsibly.
Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe if you want more and leave us some feedback. Away we go.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
You remember that FedEx commercial that used to air like in the 80s? It's the guy that was talking fast. You know, the guy, almost like the disclaimer at the end of the commercials that you hear sometimes when they do like a pharmaceutical commercial on television and they give all those, the horrible list of side effects that are happening. It causes this and this and this. But you remember the FedEx guy who was like the world's fastest talker? And he did that whole commercial when it absolutely positively has to be there overnight. Well, that's what today's show's going to be a little bit like. Except I'm not going to go fast. I'm just going to stay lean. And I mean that because you have only a one-hour show today. A one-hour Bald-Faced Truth radio show. Because we're leading you right into the women's Final Four games. Caitlin Clark, UConn, South Carolina, North Carolina State. Women's Final Four action right here on 750 The Game. We've got you covered. And so the show gets a little crunchy. Normally, there's a bunch that doesn't get into a three-hour show. So imagine today as I am sitting in production meetings, talking through what's going to go on the show. What are we going to include? What are we going to do? How are we going to get all this stuff in? Because sometimes when you do like a segment, I like to dive deep, right? Like, and so I like the 12 to 15 minute conversations that we can have on a variety of subjects. Like we talked about 1980s musics and my 1980s songs and what happened to all these bands. And I've been doing that all week. And I promise you, I'm not going to continue it into next week if it's bothering you. But getting a lot of positive feedback on the 1980s front, surprisingly, from our audience. And then we could talk about parenting. Even today, Anna was leaving, and our 9-year-old has a basketball practice. She does a little basketball training with a women's college basketball player who lives here locally, who spends like an hour with her once a week to work on dribbling and ball handling and shooting. And she is excited to go to that thing. And then the 7-year-old wanted to tag along. And Anna was like, I need to bring an activity. And I was like, are you not listening to the Bald-Faced Truth radio show? Parents, you don't need to fill all the empty spaces in your child's life with activities and tasks. And you don't need to bring fidget spinners and doodads and coloring books. Sometimes it's okay for the 7-year-old to sit and watch the sister play basketball for an hour and have a conversation, for crying out loud. I can remember going to the youth sports practices of my siblings. I grew up in a family of 6 of us and 4 kids. And I can remember going to practices and having to find something to do on the side. We'd come up with our own games. We would play off to the side. And so I like those 12 to 15 minute dives, but we're not going to get that on today's show. And so it's going to feel a little fragmented. It's going to feel a little fast moving. But we got to start. And by the way, we used to do a benchmark called 3 Random Things. And it gave me the ability to kind of like, you know, segment within a segment, you know, so I'm, the transitions are not so bad where I'm just like bouncing from 3 things. Like, so if I tell you up front, we're going to do 3 topics in one segment, it doesn't kind of rattle your brain a little bit. Well, I'm bringing it back today. Steven, you've never heard this performed. How long have you been with this show?
I've been here, it'll be 2 years in June, the end of June, so.
Well, you're about to have a first here.
I'm excited. You were telling me about it before the show. I had no idea what you're talking about. You're telling me how it works. I'm psyched for it. I'm excited.
We started this in 2014. It was the first time we performed three random things on the air. So here we are celebrating the 10-year anniversary of three random things. Let's do it.
Three random things.
See, it's just got a little, it's got a symbol involved. It's got a little. Let's start with Bronny James. Bronny James declaring for the NBA draft. Bronny James giving up his childhood. Did he ever have a childhood? USC freshman Bronny James, LeBron James Jr., has declared for the NBA draft and entered the transfer portal. He's going to have some options here. I'm not an NBA scout, but I watched Bronny James play this season. I felt bad for him at different times. I also had a lot of empathy for him and an appreciation for his game. On the positive side, he has great court vision. He understands passing. He is a good defender and a good team defender. He made USC better when he was on the court. He's a rotation player in Division I basketball. He's also 19 years old. He'll be 20 in October. He's listed at 6'4". He's not that tall. I put him at more like 6'2 and a half. We'll see what he measures at if it gets to that point. But there's possibility here is that Bronny James may or may not be headed to the NBA. He's declaring for the draft. He's entering the transfer portal. He announced his intentions this morning. He will maintain his college eligibility. He said that the year had some ups and downs. He's made the decision to enter the draft while maintaining his eligibility. So he'll have the ability to dabble around, get some feedback, and then possibly pull back and come back to college. Or, you know, he may go and work out for some NBA teams and then make a decision based on the evaluation he gets. He was the number 27 overall high school prospect in the class of 2023, as ranked by Rivals. He leaves USC after averaging 4.8 points a game and 19 minutes a game. USC struggled as a team. I don't say, you know, I read today from several news outlets that they struggled all year. I don't think USC struggled all year. They had a couple of really good weeks where they showed, you know, some promise and they had some nice moments. They went 15-18, though, and, you know, didn't work out. Andy Enfield's moved on to SMU, but jumped to the NBA possibly. You know, his dad seems to want that. He's openly talked about that. But I don't think Bronny James looks anywhere near ready to go out onto an NBA court and defend the best players in the world in a game. Somebody could take a chance on him, knowing that LeBron's got a player option with the Lakers for next season, so he could opt out for free agency. But is this a family play by LeBron and Bronny? Or is this just a Bronny James doing what's best for himself moment where, you know, he declares for the draft, knowing he can pull back? He enters the transfer portal knowing that he's going to go work out, kind of see where he's at. I don't mind this. I'm not going to sit here and criticize him for it, but I just don't think he's ready for the NBA. And if somebody tells him he's ready for the NBA, I don't know if they're coming from a good place. I don't know if they're coming from an honest place. Because it might be true that some team tells Bronny James, hey, we'll draft you in the first round. The draft it's a bad draft. It is a historically bad draft. And somebody may tell him, hey, we draft you in the opening round, Portland, and in exchange, we want LeBron in free agency. So it could play out that way. But, you know, I think he's just right now looking at his options. He obviously had looked earlier at Ohio State and Oregon. It's possible that he could end up at one of those places next season. Maybe he's just kind of done the thing at USC. But Bronny James in the portal and declaring for the draft is the first of my three random things. Now, I don't get to do this all the time, Stephen, so I'm going to replay the benchmark just because I like it.
Three random things.
There was an earthquake today. Did you know that? If the bitter cold weren't enough, the Yankees home opener featured an earthquake. The Yankees were taking batting practice, Blue Jays were not on the field today. Players in the visiting clubhouse didn't even react to this, but Aaron Judge said that he sometimes can feel rumbles at Yankee Stadium before games, but this was a different kind of rumbling. This wasn't fans. This was, an earthquake, so to speak, that happened. Aaron Boone said he was on the field. It was an earthquake magnitude 4.8, according to the U.S. Geological Survey. Could be felt from Boston to Baltimore, epicenter 45 miles west of New York City in New Jersey. Just a weird thing, and made big news today. ESPN had it as one of its top headlines, as there was some rumbling and a little earthquake. And for those of us who grew up on the Pacific coast and in the Pacific Rim, so to speak, earthquakes are not all that unusual. I grew up, several times in my childhood where we had magnitude 4.5 or greater earthquakes. Of course, I was in the Bay Area in 1989, October 17th, 1989, when that Loma Prieta earthquake shook the World Series and knocked down the Bay Bridge. And so earthquakes were not unusual. I always kind of shook my head at people from other parts of the country. I can remember when I was covering Big Ten basketball and football in the late 90s, I had people say, "Oh, you're from California. Oh, they have earthquakes out there. I could never live out there." And I thought to myself, some parts of the Midwest and certainly other parts of the country that I lived in later had hurricanes, tornadoes. I thought those things were way worse than an earthquake. Yankees felt the earthquake, kept preparing for the game. That's the right thing to do. Does it work? Does it work, Steven? Are you liking the benchmark? I'm enjoying it.
I'm into it. Yeah, I like it. I think it works.
NC State is on an NCAA tournament run, obviously. Both the men's and women's programs are in the Final Four. The men's program, the number 11 seed, the lowest seed remaining. You got number 1 UConn, number 1 Purdue, number 4 Alabama. And North Carolina State's coach has been talking about kind of their nothing to lose mentality. They have been playing loose and free. They're like a guy at a casino blackjack table playing with house money. Obviously, Kevin Keats, coach of NC State, speaking at length about sort of the opportunity for NC State to continue to win, continue to play. And if you are somebody who is tracking all of this, you're going to love this mentality that Kevin Keats and NC State are taking into the Final Four this weekend.
Well, the Wolfpack are here, and I'm so excited for our team. And, we're probably a little different than everybody else that, that's here in the Final Four. We talked about coming here and having a lot of fun, and then obviously getting down to business when we have to. But I love the way our team's playing. I don't know that anybody has ever had 9 elimination games to make it to the Final Four. Started back in D.C. and, winning the ACC tournament. And obviously, we have continued to play really well in the NCAA tournament. And we've done it with defense and a couple of DJs who have really played well, and love that part about it. But my team's playing with a lot of confidence, and we're going to play a very good Purdue team, and we'll be challenged again.
They don't want to be called Cinderella, but they really are. NC State is a 9.5-point underdog as tomorrow's game against Purdue will tip off. Not a new role for them. He mentioned the 9 elimination games. They needed to win 5 games in the ACC tournament to qualify for the NCAA tournament. Then they won consecutive games against number 6 Texas Tech, number 14 Oakland, number 2 Marquette, number 4, Duke. Keats was asked his favorite game among the 9 elimination games. He said, quote, "All of them are my favorite." They're like children, more or less. But it's a great story, NC State. Now, I think it's good enough, as George Mason proved once upon a time, Butler proved once upon a time, St. Joe's has proven, and others. It's good enough to get there. It makes the tournament. I don't know necessarily if we want, as sports fans, to see NC State playing for the national championship. But remember, 1983, Last time North Carolina State reached the Final Four, they became improbable champions, the most improbable champion in the tournament history. They upset number 6 Houston. Jim Valvano running around the court after the game looking for somebody to hug. It was just a remarkable scene in 1983. You're sure to hear more about that during the broadcast tomorrow. But what a great story that NC State is. We'll all tune in to see what they can do. They are the last Cinderella standing. The obviously the lowest rated seed on either of the tournament brackets. And they will be a fan favorite, of course, in the Final Four city of Glendale, Arizona, as the Final Four activities really underway today with a lot of news conferences and media members. And so let's rip through these, Stephen. I started with Bronny James as the first of my three random things. He declares for the NBA draft. Doesn't mean he's going, but he's gonna go do some workouts, kind of see, get some feedback. He could end up coming back to college, going to Oregon, going to Ohio State, going to SMU. Who knows? But what do you make of Bronny James declaring for the draft?
I mean, good for him, right? Like, this is a decision that apparently he's made, and if LeBron had to do anything with it or not, it doesn't really matter to me. But, I mean, I think, for me, if I was giving him real advice, I would say go back to school, develop your game. It was just an unfair thing that happened to him in the summer with the heart thing, right? Like, we forget that, the health problems that he had, and just to play last season was awesome for Bronny. So I think the tough part is, you mentioned it before, the draft this season in the NBA is really bad. So there's going to be chances, if a team likes you, maybe they'll, you know, stay in the first round and they say, no, we can just take a flyer on Bronny because he has some potential. He's LeBron's son. Like, he has a good pedigree. But I think for Bronny's development as a basketball player, I would love to see him go back to school, whether it's USC, whether it's Duquesne, who their new coach, Drew Joyce, played with LeBron back in high school. Like, he knows that guy. He's going to be very well taken care of there. Like, he would be the guy that handles the basketball, be able to develop his game that way. I would love to see Bronny play back in school, but I don't know what's going to happen. And I think if I had to choose, I think Bronny's going to the draft, just because I think the draft is so poor, and I think LeBron, as a player option, he wants to play with Bronny, he wants to play with his son. I think this is probably the best opportunity to kind of use that leverage and get where you want to be.
Is it a family package deal decision? And if so, is that fair to Bronny? Meaning, we all know that if Bronny spent another year in college, he might develop a little better. He might, you know, be able to get himself better equipped to compete in the NBA. But if he goes now, maybe because this is a bad draft, there is somebody willing to take a flyer, because you're not only going to get Bronny, you have a really good chance to get LeBron opting out with the Lakers and signing with you.
Yeah, it's tough because I don't know that it is a package deal. I don't know that any team that says, hey, if we get Bronny, like, LeBron is coming, or if LeBron goes somewhere, like, I do think if LeBron goes somewhere, whether it's the Lakers, whether it's a new team, and he opts out, he wants to go somewhere else, that is a package deal. Like, he is saying, you will get Bronny James. I could see where the Lakers, you know, try to get back in the draft the end of the second round, or then the second round, and say, hey, we'll pick up Bronny. We'll let him, you know, build a flyer around him. We'll let him play in the G League. Because I think LeBron likes it in L.A. I think he really does. And so I could see that happening if Bronny stays in school. It does seem like it's kind of a package deal. I don't know if NBA teams are willing to do that. LeBron's age. LeBron isn't good enough to have a package deal like this, I don't think.
Well, here's the question then, because, and you know I'm going to ask this, the Blazers are going to have 2 first-round picks. If LeBron says, I'll opt out and sign in Portland if you draft Bronny, and you're Joe Cronin or Burt Cold or Jody Allen, do you do that knowing it's a sideshow move, it's going to draw you some fans and sell you some tickets, this is not the path to winning, this probably delays your long-term trajectory as a franchise, but do you do it, Stephen, knowing that you sell some tickets and suddenly you're kind of relevant for a little bit?
Would I do it? No, I would not do it. If Jody Allen and Joe Cronin make the decision, I think I could see where Jody Allen says, yeah, this is a good move. Get the fans back on our side. I don't think it'll happen. It's very slim.
I don't think so either.
Very slim the Blazers would do it. I don't think it's the right decision.
I don't think he'd want to go to Portland. Because what LeBron's going to do, everything in his career has been orchestrated. Okay, he's, to an extent, like, he couldn't control where he was drafted. He couldn't control who took him. But he wasn't averse from going to the Cleveland Cavaliers in the draft because, you know, he was an Akron kid. And so it worked out for him. I just kind of wondering if, like, you know, if Memphis had the first pick in the draft that year, if LeBron James would have pulled an Eli Manning and said, I don't want to go there. I want to go to L.A. or I want to be, you know, so ultimately he got himself to where? Miami, back to Cleveland, then to L.A. He's always orchestrated where he ends up. I have a hard time thinking he would be okay with Portland being that showcase place where he and Bronny get to play together. This isn't like Ken Griffey Jr. and Sr., you know, playing in the same game, in the same outfield, you know, in Seattle. This is, Portland would be kind of it's not on Broadway, right? Like, you're off Broadway. So I kind of think the move for LeBron, if he really wants to orchestrate it, is to squeeze the Lakers into drafting Bronny and then saying, I will re-sign with you, or I will not opt out if you draft Bronny, because I want to do this and I want us both to be in Lakers uniforms. But I just don't, I kind of think he, you know, the feedback he's going to get, like, I just don't think the NBA teams are going to be like, hey, you're ready.
Health issue too. I don't know how many teams are going to be like, yeah, you know, you had a heart complication this summer. Like, yeah, we're willing to write that off. I just feel like that's going to be a problem as well.
Earthquake was the second of my three random things. Earthquake in New York City. Have you ever been in a big earthquake?
Never a big one. I remember when I was in seventh or eighth grade, I remember there was an earthquake, and I remember like plants falling off of like the filing cabinets, but it wasn't like a big earthquake or anything. So no, not a big one.
6.9 magnitude, Bay Area, October the 17th, 1989. I was driving. I happened to be attending community college. I was in a community college called De Anza College. It was right across the street from the Apple campus. Side note, every day I would go spend $6 buying Sbarro or whatever I was eating for lunch. I should have been buying one share of Apple every day, Apple stock. I would have been far better off. But I remember driving home October the 17th, 1989. I was headed home, headed to see the World Series. All of a sudden, I thought I had a flat tire. I pulled over. Now, normally in an earthquake, you can't feel anything. But I pulled over because I thought I must have a flat tire. I was weaving side to side all of a sudden. I pull over. I realize everybody else is pulling over, checking under their car, too. I happen to look up at a telephone pole, and I've never seen this before or since. Telephone pole looking like it was in a cartoon, going wonk, 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 back side to side. And I went, oh, earthquake. I turned on the radio, as many do when they're looking for news and information, and I found out that a devastating earthquake had struck the San Francisco Bay Area. A lot of destruction, a lot of despair. It was certainly a reminder of how powerful Mother Nature and the plates that are out there shifting beneath our feet, all that seismic activity, a reminder of how big that can be. It was 5:04 p.m. on October the 17th, 1989. The Yankees had a 4.8 magnitude, and I love it. Like, ESPN's headline was like, the game, they could just continue on. Like, okay, nobody was hurt, nothing fell down, nobody died in the earthquake, and yet, you know, and they played on. 1989, the World Series got, you know, postponed, and we all remember that. The Bay Bridge collapsed, and Dave Stewart of the A's and several other players went down there to kind of do what they could to help, and it was such a devastating thing in 1989. I remember that, and I remember growing up, we weren't really afraid of them because you can't really prepare yourself other than to know what you would do if you were in an earthquake. But you know, it was like they aren't you don't really get to know what it's like until it's actually happening. But I always kind of shook my head. I was living in Tallahassee, Florida, and people there were like, "Oh my gosh, how could you live in earthquake country?" And I was like, you're living in like hurricane and tornado country. Like, that's far worse when you know the tornado's coming and all you can do is put plywood over your windows and crawl into a bathtub and put a blanket over yourself. Like, you know, that's no way to live. All right, the third thing of my three random things, NC State and Kevin Keats. They are Cinderella, Stephen. Do you give NC State any kind of shot against Purdue on Saturday's semifinal?
Well, anything can happen, but no, I don't, John. I think Purdue wins and handles this game pretty easily. Big point spread. I think Purdue wins and covers the spread. This is where the run kind of ends for these type of teams. There's not many teams that are double-digit or close to double-digit seed, make a, you know, a crazy run in the Final Four and actually get to the national championship. Usually it it crashes right in the Final Four. It's usually bad. So, no, I think Purdue is going to win. I think Purdue covers the game.
By the way, my friend Drew is listening to the show in Arizona. He happens to be at the Final Four. And he's hanging out, and he texted me on the Bronny James front. He said, okay, you're 19 years old. You're making seven figures as a pro athlete. Let's say he's in the NBA. You want to be hanging out with your dad?
I don't. No offense to my dad.
Maybe Bronny's different. But, you know, like, part of the beauty of watching young professional athletes blossom in their league is just kind of seeing them at a age where maybe it's happening very fast for them, just seeing them sort of come to life and get momentum and direction. And we've all seen it. We've all watched young athletes do this. I think it's a whole nother equation when their parent is also on the team. Like, you know, Bronny James, is that the life that he wants? I don't know.
It just seems to me, John, if he does go to the NBA, it's not about his actual playing career. It's about everything else. And so for me, like, I would always just want to have what's best for his actual basketball career. Now, it may not be best for his business career. Like, he's going to make millions of dollars, all that kind of stuff. But I just think if he wants to be the best basketball player he can, it makes so much sense to go back to school and develop your game for another year and come out when you're 19 or 20 years old rather than, you know, 18, 19. It just doesn't make any sense. And it seems like if LeBron really does push his way through and says, I'm going to play with my son no matter what, it's not about championships. It's not about basketball. It's about I just get to play with my son. So I just hate that part of it. I want it to be about the actual game. So I think if for Bronny, I don't have a problem if he goes to the league. I just think it's best for him if he stayed in school.
Yeah, and here's the other thing, too. Selfishly, I'd love to see him at the University of Oregon just to see what that looked like and how good he could be with good coaching and Dana Altman. And imagine, and here's the thing that's awesome about this, imagine a backcourt that could feature Jackson Shellstad and Bronny James. Like, that would not be bad, that combination. All right, leave it here. Coming up, we're going to dive deeper into the problem that Oregon State is facing. There have been some rumors out there about Scott Ruick and Tennessee. I have a little intel on that front. Leave it here.
You've got the home of the truth. Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Greatest stats in sports history. Greatest stats in sports history. Do you have a greatest stats in sports history nomination? I'll take it at 503-417-7575. You can tell me, hey, Pete Rose career hits 42-56. That's the greatest stat in sports history. You could tell me that. I don't agree with it. You could offer up that Cal Ripken's consecutive game streak might be the greatest stat in sports history, 2,632 straight games. You could offer that up. I don't agree with it. You could offer to me that Wilt Chamberlain scoring 100 points in a game, or you could say that Bill Russell winning 11 NBA titles plus an Olympic medal and a college national championship and a lot of pickup games. And, you know, you could argue that's the greatest stat. I wouldn't agree with it. I would offer this, and it comes because I think it's mind-blowing. Tony Gwynn had 287 plate appearances against Greg Maddux, Tom Glavin, and John Smoltz. Okay? Bunch of Cy Youngs, like 12,000 combined strikeouts. Hall of Fame, Hall of Fame, Hall of Fame. Tony Gwynn had 287 plate appearances against that trio. He struck out only three times and he hit 381. That's pretty damn good. That's rich, as they'd say. I'll go further. Tony Gwynn faced Pedro Martinez, John Smoltz, Greg Maddux, and Glavine a total of 323 times. Guess how many strikeouts? Three. Still. You add Pedro on top of that, he never struck Gwynn out. The guy hit 381. Masterful. Best hitter in the game? I don't know, but man, that's an incredible stat. Steven, do you have a nominee for best stat ever?
My initial thought was the Cal Ripken one. Played that. I mean, that's just such a good stat, just to be on the field, to be available to play. That was my first initial one. I also thought of the Wilt Chamberlain averaging 50 points a game.
Yeah.
50 points a game in the season. I think that is pretty amazing as well.
How about Oscar Robertson, who averaged a triple-double one season?
Well, Russell Westbrook did that just a little bit.
Yeah.
So, no, not that one.
No?
No, I don't like that one.
But Robertson led the league in scoring the same year. He had 11.4 assists, 12.5 rebounds.
We were just talking about LeBron and just him and his son. All of LeBron's career stats are pretty amazing as well. The points, rebounds, and assists. No one, I don't know who's going to touch those records. Those are unbelievable. The consistency that he's had and for how long it's been, he's going to keep adding on to those numbers, man. That was amazing as well.
And I should add a caveat. This shouldn't be like, what is an unbreakable record, but just what's the best stat you ever heard? Like, because that Gwynn one just blows me away. You know, you could say Emmitt Smith rushed for 18,355 yards. Nobody's touching that. You know, that's gonna be unbreakable. You could say, hey, Joe DiMaggio, batting in 56 straight, nobody's touching that. Walter Johnson, for somebody to get to Johnson's record, by the way, for career shutouts, 110, you would have to pitch 5 shutouts every year for 22 years. Problem is, these pitchers today are not even doing complete games in a lot of cases. And so it's just, it's untouchable, but Johnny Vandermeer throwing back-to-back no hitters. That's pretty good.
That is pretty good. I have another one. Jamie Moyer, when he was 45, he pitched game 5 of the World Series, pitched 6 1/3 innings.
Oh,
45 yeah. years old.
How about 680 innings pitched in a season? Will White did it in 1879. By the way, he had 75 complete games that year.
I'm like, hot take, that's not being broken. That's not broken.
Did they not have another guy? All right, I'll tell you this. When I was in high school, my freshman year of high school, I played catcher, okay? And we had a pitcher, left-handed pitcher, named Tony McAnalis. Great curveball. He had an amazing curveball. He had two things that I'll never forget about Tony. He had an amazing curveball as a left-handed pitcher, and his hat would fall off every time he threw a pitch. And so Tony, the umpire, would get really mad at about the third inning, kind of tapping me on the shoulder going, go talk to your pitcher about putting his hat on right. And I said, it doesn't matter. It's just his pitching motion. He threw so aggressively. There was a lot of body motion. His hat would fly off every single pitch. He'd have to pick up his hat. And so Tony, though, here's the claim to fame. I have never seen anybody do this. Tony threw complete game shutouts on both ends of a doubleheader on the same day. He pitched the first game through a shutout, pitched the second game through a shutout. Our coach should have been arrested. Our coach was like a college kid who was coaching freshman high school baseball. But Tony had it cooking in game one. Coach just said, stay warm and get back out there. I don't know if Tony can lift his arm today, but I will never forget of high school games at that time were seven inning. I'll never forget 14 innings of Tony McAnalis throwing pitches followed by picking up his hat every single pitch. Umpire had it. I caught both games of that doubleheader, and I can just tell you, from a catching perspective, you catch the pitch, you're eager to throw it back to the pitcher. But Tony's busy picking his hat up. And so you got to wait for Tony to pick his hat up and then toss the ball back to him. I bet it took 6 hours to play two games.
Trailblazers losing 10 straight playoff games from 2016 to 2018. It's pretty impressive.
That's a great stat. By the way, the Major League Baseball record for most innings pitched in a single game would blow you away. Do you know what it is?
No, I don't know. I'm going to guess 19.
26.
Ah.
Leon Cador and Joe Oshager, respectively of the Brooklyn Dodgers and Boston Braves, were the only two pitchers in a 26-inning marathon in 1920.
You got the strikeouts in that one? How many strikeouts did
you get? Ended 1-1.
Jeez.
And they called the game because of darkness. I believe this is an unbreakable record. You know, teams would not use just one pitcher for 26 innings. And
that's
so
going to lower your ERA a little bit right
yeah,
there.
Yeah, I think it's unbreakable. I teased a little Scott Ruick. You know, there's been some scuttlebutt out there about him possibly being engaged with Tennessee, or is he not? And I can just tell you that sources at Oregon State are telling me they do not believe that there's anything to that. I don't want to report that as official news, but I want to tell you as a listener of the show that I am being told by Oregon State that they have no reason to think Scott Ruick to Tennessee is happening. And of course, as I say that, I'm knocking on wood and crossing my fingers, but I'll keep you updated on that front. It just appears as though the Final Four is going on, and we're going to get some games today. Caitlin Clark and obviously Iowa playing against UConn. And then you have South Carolina against North Carolina State. But a lot of Oregon State fans in the background of that, really, I think, interested in what is happening with the roster and the possible turnover. Are players, more players getting in the portal? Is the coach going to be there? You know, more to come. I would just say to be determined on that front. Many at Oregon State do expect there's going to be other players who jump into the portal. But I also think Oregon State would be really smart to try to lock Scott Ruick down. I have not had contact with him. I have nothing on the record there. But officials and sources at Oregon State telling me, I asked them anything to this Tennessee thing, and I am being told that they do not expect that that is a thing. But again, nothing on the record sourced in that way. So stay tuned. Keep it here. You got the BFT.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
I hope Caitlin Clark had a personal agenda against LSU. And I know there's nothing personal between me and her, so I don't need to be seeing her drop 50 on us next weekend, you know? So I love her. I think she's the best player. Forget I ever said Paige's the best player in the country. I think she's the best player of all time. I don't know whoever said that I said that Paige is the best player in the country.
Gino Auriemma at UConn, he will face Caitlin Clark today as Iowa takes on UConn in one semifinal at the women's Final Four. North Carolina State, South Carolina in the other game. On Saturday, on the men's bracket, it will be an awfully interesting matchup that is garnering, obviously, a lot of attention. Everybody kind of has UConn penciled into the Final Four. Alabama will play UConn tomorrow at in the late game. North Carolina State at Purdue in the early game tomorrow. So the four matchups are set for the semifinals in men's and women's. And, Stephen, I'm here to say I'm going to tell you in order which games are most interesting to me, starting, you know, combining all four games in order of interest. The most interesting game for me is Iowa-UConn on the women's side of the bracket. Second most interesting game comes on the men's side of the bracket. North Carolina State-Purdue is the second most interesting game for me. Then I'm probably looking at South Carolina, North Carolina State in the women's bracket, and then Alabama, UConn in the men's bracket is the, as far as intrigue and interest. There's my ranking 1 to 4. How about you?
It's funny because your number 4 is actually my number 1. I'm very interested in this UConn-Alabama game. Reason why, John, UConn, they've won their last 10 NCAA tournament games. Obviously, they won the championship last year and then all the games this year. They've won every game by over 13. They've covered every single game. Like, this is an historic run out of the UConn men's program, and I don't know that it's getting enough attention about it. So I want to see how this goes. And Alabama is the type of team where they're going to get up and down, and they want to play fast. If they just start making threes, maybe this game is close. Maybe it's another blowout by 30. I feel like that's kind of the range of outcomes in this game is huge, where UConn could win by a lot, Alabama could hang. So for me, that one is just so intriguing for me. The second one for me would be the UConn-Iowa game on the women's side. You know, yeah. Caitlin Clark, just the way that is. I think this is going to be a real tough matchup for Iowa and Caitlin Clark. I think the fact that Gino Auriemma, you know, maybe the best women's coach of all time, like, he's going to have some type of game plan for it. And I want to see what it is, what he does to slow down Caitlin Clark. So that's number 2 for me. Number 3 for me, NC State, Purdue. I do think Purdue is going to run away with this one, but the intriguing matchup of Zach Edey just being 7'4" and a monster and a brick wall going against DJ Burns, who's 6'9" and, you know, pudgy and funny and having fun out there, just laughing and, you know, just dominating everybody that way. I can't wait to see how that turns out. And then for me, South Carolina and NC State, I think South Carolina, you know, rolls in this game, and I don't really think it's much of a game the entire time. So for me, that's my 4.
South Carolina's got so much depth in that women's bracket, and I was told by a Division I women's basketball coach that she believed that every player on South Carolina's roster was getting 6 figures to be on that roster. So you talk about, you know, the highest payroll in women's college basketball, maybe at South Carolina. They're also really good and really well coached by Dawn Staley. I think they get to the title game. I picked UConn to upset Iowa. And I only did it because it was the 1-point spread that jumped out at me. When I looked at the spreads at all of the games, the men's and the women's game, it was the only one that I thought was wrong. And I understand why it's wrong. There's a lot of hysteria and hoopla and interest around Iowa and Caitlin Clark. And so because of it, I think you have a little bit of a problem in the sports book. You have a bookmaker who's got to set a spread on a game, but then also account for kind of that halo effect of people who only love Caitlin Clark, who are coming to the game and wanting to wager on the game because she's in it. And, you know, you forget you got Paige Beckers at UConn, who's a really good player. You've got 2 other players on that roster who I think will play in the WNBA. I think UConn is every bit as good as Iowa. And if I were setting a spread on that game, I would make it a pick 'em. So when I saw Iowa -2.5, it jumped out at me as like, that's wrong. That line is wrong. That's a 2.5-point tip that is, you know, the spread is being tipped to, and it's a little lopsided because of Caitlin Clark. And so I think the book is essentially going, hey, we need to make Iowa a favorite because people are going to bet on Iowa anyway. And this happens. People bet on Notre Dame that way. People bet on Alabama that way. People bet on Oregon that way. I often see the point spread on those kinds of games just skewed a little bit because they know that the betting public that doesn't have a dog in the fight is going to say, hey, I'll take Iowa because Caitlin Clark's kind of famous. Meanwhile, Caitlin Clark, you know, you heard the Gino Auriemma comment. He said he hoped that it was personal against LSU. Caitlin Clark said it wasn't because she was asked if it was personal. She's just locked in.
To be honest, no. I feel like we prepare for this game. We focus on Iowa. We do what Iowa does, and we'll come out on top. And that was kind of Coach Bluder's message. It's not about last year. You worry too much about the past. You know, you're going to get caught up in that. It's about being present, being where your feet are. Don't worry about being in the Final Four, be in this moment, be in the Elite Eight. You know, enjoy that and soak that in. And, you know, that's what's going to allow you to win 40 minutes. And that's exactly what we did. And, you know, I thought we just played a really good basketball game. When they went on their runs, we always had an answer. And that's all you can ask of your team.
All right. So she is locked in now in a national semifinal.
And John, just to let you know, that spread has actually gone up to 3.5 now. Yeah, Iowa and Caitlin Clark's over under player prop. We love the player props. 34.5 points for Caitlin Clark.
That's a lot of points.
That's a lot of points.
It's a lot of points. And I think these teams are really even. And here's the other thing. There is a we've been here before that matters in college basketball. UConn has it on the men's side. To some extent, you know, Iowa's got it on the women's side in that they have played in high-profile games, and they've kind of been on the stage before. But the guy who has really been here before is Gino Auriemma. He's 70 years old. You look at his history with the NCAA tournament, you know, he's been to the Final Four 23 times. 23 times in the Final Four.
Well, and how many times do you think he's been an underdog in this situation? Not many.
He knows what the hell he's doing. And I saw him do it against Juju Watkins in the Portland Regional Final. And I watched him with a team that is very shorthanded, that is playing a lot of minutes. They, you know, Beckers didn't come off the floor. He had three players in that game that basically didn't come off the floor. He's already in the Hall of Fame as a coach. He's been the National Coach of the Year 9 times, okay? And this is a guy, obviously, with national championship, you know, Division I champions, 11 times he's won it all. He knows what to do with Caitlin Clark. I'm not saying he's going to hold her to 20 points, but I'm saying he's going to make Iowa uncomfortable in a way that I don't think that they have been uncomfortable. And so I think this is going to be a game. And a lot of people wanting to hand Iowa the win and say it'll be Iowa, South Carolina. Let's see what UConn can do to disrupt that. And I think the game should be a pick 'em. And so I kind of looked at that one and went, like, I don't see that as like a 3.5 point spread in that game. Well, we'll see what happens. We'll have that game right here on 750 The Game. The women's Final Four semifinals coming up. Want you here for it. We'll be back next week with great shows. Bald-faced truth, not here for a long time, just a good time.